When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What else with Corey Mann on the Studio DNA Podcast Network? One-on-one conversations with some of your favorite artists. Find this podcast on iTunes, Spotify, and Spreaker.com. What else with Corey Mann on the Studio DNA Podcast Network?
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that's messing with magnets now, it's SifPop. Welcome to SifPop Weekly, streaming live most weekends, or available to download later in your podcast feed, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks.
Patrons get those perks.
Family.
I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and we've been together a long time, but he just can't carry me anymore. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
Freaking magnets, how do they work?
Each week we'll chat about movies, TV, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. And please welcome our guest this week. With any luck today, he might just win a pig. It's John Paula!
You gotta take a long walk for that one.
Yeah.
That is a reference to our second film today,
that
for
is
those
correct.
Who had no idea what that meant.
We're going to talk about The Ice Road for our second film today. That is a reference to that. And then, of course, we've got F9 that we will talk about for our primary
F9
review.
Colon The Fast Saga.
It's you know, I wondered title. About that because I've been seeing it all over the place just as F9. But
usually just go by whatever letterbox title is, which, and that pulls from the movie database. And that's listed as just F9, but all the promotional
correct.
Material and all the posters, and I think even the movie proper had F9 colon The Fast Saga as like a subtitle, which I think is just so goofy. Like up until now, they've never referred to it as The Fast Saga. That's a completely new term.
they're just trying to really, you know, tweak that cinematic universe idea, you know, like just be like, I don't know, a Star Wars story. Han Solo, a Star Wars story. F9, The Fast Saga. They're trying to do
this. This is not a franchise that has done anything like half-heartedly. They go all the way all the time.
Yeah.
I love that.
I'm excited to talk about both of these movies, actually. And then we've got a best ever challenge. Since Liam Neeson is in The Ice Road, we thought we'd talk about his best movies. So we're doing best ever Liam Neeson movies for the best ever challenge.
And that is a stacked category. Liam Neeson has been in a lot of movies.
He's been in some films. He's done some work. And then, of course, we'll do our...
And I'm probably going to mess up the whole trumping thing because I know my list for Liam Neeson is totally out of whack. So what I have, what you guys have low is what I'm going to have high.
I think we might surprise each other. I don't know.
Yeah, really? It could be interesting. It could be interesting.
Okay.
In fact, we hope it is. That's why we do the podcast. We hope it's interesting. Buried Treasure, all that kind of fun stuff to come as well. John, it is great to have you back on the show, hanging out with
Likewise.
Us again. Love having you in here every month. And you were keen to review F9.
I really was. I was really stoked about
this. So tell me a little bit about that. So what is that? Why are you so excited?
Why do I love this franchise like completely unironically?
Yeah, tell me.
I think it's because I can't not smile. I rewatched 6 of the 10 movies this week leading up to F9, which was my first trip back to the cinema in 18 months.
Yeah, talk about that too. Yeah.
Oh, that was great. My theater only had like 3 other people in it. I paid the upcharge, sat in the D-box chair, and the whole movie, I'm just like shaking and rumbling, fully vaccinated, mask is off. I'm just having a blast. I'm laughing out loud, and it felt good to be back in like a properly mixed, darkened, soundproof room rather than just my bedroom on a hot summer night. And I loved it. I mean, just being back in the cinema for any movie was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But I think seeing this family and these outlandish stunts and set pieces is just, I don't know, there's something very like comfort food about it.
Yeah.
It's not gourmet cuisine, but this is like a really good, juicy, fatty burger.
Yeah.
Well, and if you had it every single night, it would be unpleasant. But like once in a while, you want like a really decadent, like over the top meal, and that's what this series is always.
We're kind of dipping our toes in a little bit of the review a little early, but yeah. But as far as like going to a theater, it's interesting. I had an opposite experience in that the screen I saw it on wasn't a great screen. There was like a stain on the left side of the
gross.
Screen that, you know how sometimes like if there's like just even the slightest thing, like when like,
it bugs the
yeah, yeah. It's so I was just like, I'd just rather be home watching this. Like I've gotten so spoiled watching stuff at home, you know, on my TV. And it's just like, man, I didn't really, now I've seen more, you know, I've been back before this, but more and more, I'm just feeling like, I kind of don't want it to go back. I want to go to the theater occasionally when, you know, I want to experience something with the crowd.
I love the day and date home and cinema releases. And I can be like, I don't know if I want to go all the way to the cinema for Quiet Place 2, but for the bigger event film, something like this or the new Black Widow coming out, like, yeah, I want to see that with a crowd.
Right. Yeah, there's something fun about seeing some of this stuff with a crowd. So it'll be interesting to see where it goes.
But of course, the bigger question in terms of the industry is that viable box office model to only make tentpole big ticket films, the ones that people see? If
we're going
to
find
the
out.
Only things, yeah, are the only movies people willing to pay money for are the Marvel movies from now on? Like, I know there's probably enough of them to like mm-hmm. drag cinemas a couple more years, but I feel like the indie picture in movie theaters might be on its way out. I don't know that like small budget films have a place there.
You know my
at
opinion.
At least not like a viable one.
My opinion is 15 years from now, we won't even call them movies. We'll call any theater experience a Disney. I'm going to go see a Disney today. that's my opinion. All right, let's get into it. No reason to hold off. Let's go ahead and get into our reviews with a review of F9.
Been a long time, Tom.
So we're up against a master thief, assassin, high performance driver. Who is he?
Jacob is Dom's brother.
Your whole life, you pushed yourself to be faster than Dom. Smarter than Dom. Stronger than Dom.
But could you kill him? Because I'm ready if you are.
Dominic Toretto and his crew battle the most skilled assassin and high-performance driver they've ever encountered. His forsaken brother. F9 brings us a lot of the crew we know and love. In fact, more of the crew we know and love probably than ever before. I shouldn't say ever before, but you know, certainly there's a lot going on here. And then adds to that the brother character, which you know, John Cena coming in playing
the heretofore unseen, unmentioned Jacob Toretto.
That's right.
And it's so weird for a franchise that has really, really prided itself on being about the family. Mm. How have you never mentioned your estranged brother?
Yeah. All right, I'd love to hear it. Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? John, you first.
You could probably guess that I really liked this one.
Okay, high side of liked, it sounds like. Andrew, what about you?
This is the dumbest damn movie I have ever seen in my entire life.
I not disagree.
You've yet
really
to answer the question,
like
my friend. You've yet
I
to
really
answer the
didn't
question.
Like it.
Okay.
Really didn't like it.
Really,
close
really.
Close to hated it.
Close to hated it. Yeah, you're alone on an island, John. I hated this movie. I had a terrible time at this movie. Oh. And I usually give myself to these films pretty well. We'll get into some of the reasons why, but John, you obviously enjoyed yourself, had a good time, gave yourself to it. So let's let you start. Tell us why this was an exciting movie for you.
See, I had a feeling this would happen, which is why I definitely strongly volunteered to come on this episode. So at least somebody would be here to defend the good honor that is the Fast Saga. And I don't know. I feel like at this point, you either love this stuff or you don't. Like, there's nothing new in F9. Like, mm-hmm. more or less, this is the same.
I would argue that, but go ahead.
There are, like, definitely insanely unbelievable stunts and sequences. There's an entire chase in the Thailand jungle involving landmines that's bananas.
Mm-hmm.
Banana hammocks, as Andrew was fond of saying. And then there's another sequence with magnets that just throws all physics and realism out the window. It's just magnets do exactly what they need to and nothing more. And that's fine. Mm-hmm. And of course, the big joke up until now is, yeah, what are they going to do? Go to space next? What if they do? What if they do what go to space do? In this and movie? Is that a problem?
I will say this before we get too much further. If you're worried about us spoiling this movie, just go ahead and you know, jump over to the timestamp for the next review, because this is one of those that I'm not sure. I watched the trailer after watching the movie today.
I did as well.
And it's the whole movie. The trailer's the whole movie. This is not a movie that is concerned about protecting information from you. And so, you know, we're going to follow suit a little bit. I don't know if we'll tiptoe around really anything. But I did want you to know that in case you hadn't seen it. You know, once we get through each of our general thoughts, we'll be a little more bold about talking about some of the specific things, because I think we kind of need them to you know, kind of talk about this. But yeah, those three things you mentioned, definitely. What else, John? What else did you like about it?
I think first and foremost, this movie has always, or this franchise has always worked and succeeded because of the characters and the camaraderie and the relationships. And it feels like a long-running TV show. And at this point, at least I personally really mm-hmm. love these characters, and I love seeing whatever adventure they're up to. And like having Tyrese Gibson crack jokes and Dom Toretto just, you know, grunt mm-hmm. really menacingly and stomp his feet and break parking garages. Like I'm in for that stuff. And all of that like operatic melodrama of all these characters and their interwoven backstories and like these dramatic character reveals and like people coming back from the dead, other people. Like just all, there must be at least a half a dozen, if not more, dramatic character reveals in the first half of this movie. Every other scene is like, done. Oh, who's that? Like, and someone else comes out of the door. Oh, mm-hmm. Jordana Brewster, she's back in this. And it's like, oh, Lucas Black from Tokyo Drift, he's in this movie too. Like, they mm-hmm. just keep pulling other characters from other movies.
Yeah.
And I think if you're invested in this universe and you remember all these characters, seeing them kind of reunite in this dynamic, like, pastiche way is really fun. And I think if you enjoy the characters, you'll enjoy the experience. But you really have to shut your brain off and lock it in a box and throw it down the stairs and forget it, because there is no thinking allowed.
Andrew, do you want to summarize any of your thoughts before we kind of get a little more detail?
I'll throw out a pro. You mentioned Jordana Brewster. I think she's acting like she's in another movie than she's really in, because she's actually trying and like she's conveying emotion. Like whenever like John Cena and Vin Diesel like have a scene together, she's like, she feels, she's acting like she's conflicted. Like, oh, these are my brothers, you know, I don't want to have to choose, you know. And I'm like, that's not the movie you're in right now. You're in the boom, boom, vroom, vroom movie, you know, so... Okay, I guess I could give her a shout out for, you know, trying.
Andrew, I don't know if you knew this, but that was the original title of the series was
Boom 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 Boom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, Justin Lin, you really missed the mark on that one.
Yep, totally. Go ahead.
If I can remove myself from how I feel about the franchise,
okay,
and look at it from a spectacle perspective, I can say that there's stuff going on that if I were able to turn my brain off, I could go, that's fun, you know. And that's not me digging at people who like this franchise. That's just my own personal, you know, take on, like,
sure.
I'm sure, like, yeah, it's easy to look at some of the stuff, like all the stuff with the magnets. It's ridiculous. It's stupid. Is it cool to look at? Sure. Yeah.
Is it though?
I enjoyed it.
No, it's Aaron, I'm with you. It's the dumbest thing ever. They don't follow any rules. But if I'm going from like a Michael Bay perspective of, hey, show me an explosion with 5,000% more sparks that are required, then yeah. Explosions are fun to look at.
You know what's cool? What's cool is pulling a safe out of a building and dragging it down the street. You know, what's cool is skydiving a car off of a bridge. You know what I mean? Like,
so you liked the older.
I think this franchise hit its stride with 4 and 5, especially 5, and has just been having fun. 6 is fun. 7 is fun. 8 is fun. I think 7 is, you know, maybe my second favorite. We'll talk a little bit more of our rankings in our post show for our members, for our SIFPOP members. But I've really enjoyed the turn this took from serious street car racing movie to superhero movie. I like that. I think that's really fun.
That's actually where you and I differ.
Right. No, and we've always had that disagreement. I don't think this movie is that. I feel like that's
an interesting take, because I feel like for those who really loved Fast 5, 6, and 7, which for me is sort of the high water mark of the 10 pictures.
I agree.
I feel like 9 is more of the same. Not as strong as those three, but I feel like it's just like they went maybe a little too far with some of the unbelievable physics and rope swinging and all these moments. But they're sort of in the same style and in the same, I don't know, physics, which is like a very loose interpretation of reality.
You can give a middle finger to physics and I can have a good time. Like, that's okay. Like, I can suspend my disbelief and just have fun and go, oh, that's cool. I didn't have that experience in this one. Like, I like the magnet stuff, the space stuff, the stuff you mentioned. It wasn't the physics that bothered me. It was just, it wasn't exciting. Like, it was just, okay, magnets drew cars together and, you know, I don't know. And nothing else. Yeah, to me, it felt like a group of writers sitting in a room going, you know what would be cool to do? And then none of them actually finish the sentence with something that's actually cool. Like, it just.
You see, Aaron, that's where I'm going to disagree with you, because I think that that's where the franchise. This movie here feels exactly the same as like the last three movies.
I totally disagree.
It doesn't feel any different.
I just want to point out that we're bad. We have a very unique three-way disagreement.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Andrew and I agree on the ethos of the film.
Correct.
But we personally differ on whether or not we enjoy it. Like, Andrew and I both agree.
Correct.
This movie is very similar, and I've always loved them, and Andrew's always hated them. But Aaron, you're in a unique position where you actually like the previous couple movies, but now don't like this.
I think this
And that's, that's the opinion that's the most interesting to me.
Yeah.
Because I guess I'm not, like, the stuff in the jungle with the landmines and the swerving and the bikes and the flips, I thought that all was photographed well. It was very exciting.
Yeah, but how many times have we seen explosions going off behind vehicles?
How many? That's this franchise.
I mean, that's
what I'm saying. But usually this franchise will do, like, okay. So where this movie tried to, for me, where this movie tried to do cool moments was, and it happened like four times, three if I'm exaggerating, maybe four. But it where somebody would be falling from a great distance and they'd catch them with a car, which is the stupidest thing ever. All you're doing is
they've been doing that for.
Replacing a somewhat soft surface with a hard metal surface about 3 feet further off the ground. Like, it's a dumb concept to begin with. But aside from the physics, it's like, how many times do we need to see that? Like, I thought the imagination on this one was, I don't know. And maybe it is the physics. Maybe it is just it went too far for me. It was a bridge too far. That could possibly be it. But for me...
That's interesting to say, because for me... One of the big things I've always enjoyed in movies, especially action movies, is show me something I haven't seen before. And the Mission Impossible franchise has been great.
Yes.
Like, I've never seen an actual actor do a barrel roll in a helicopter with an IMAX camera strapped to it. Like, that was wild.
Mm-hmm.
And in this movie, we don't get the realism of Vin Diesel actually doing these stunts himself in a realistic way that's grounded. Mm-hmm. So it's never going to approach the highs of the Mission Impossible franchise, but it definitely plays in the same space where, like, let's do big, big spectacle set pieces and then figure out the MacGuffin plot that interweaves these scenes later. And there's a couple, like, big show pieces in this movie, like the bridge sequence where Dom and Letty drive full speed at an open chasm and hook the axle of their car on a steel cable from a now collapsed bridge. hook the rope on the axle and then literally swing across like Tarzan.
Tarzan.
And it was just, I was literally cackling. I was out loud just like guffawing.
I will,
Andrew. It was like, it was just like, I can't believe this.
I will give you Tarzan. Tarzan was the one moment where I was like, okay, that, you know, that's, and that was early on. So I was still having a fairly good time. And the other thing is, I promise I'll let you say good things here in a bit. But the thing is, after that segment, I was so bored for so long. Like it seemed like there was a good 30-minute stretch of the movie that was just exposition and trying to weave the plot together so that it worked and characters. Like it's like people, it's like they sat down with a list of things that had to happen in the movie and then just did some crazy math to figure out how to make it happen. And that whole mathematics arithmetic section of the movie for me just bored me out of my skull. And so by the time we got to whatever the next big action scene was,
you're right though. The next big scene was, like the magnet chase in Edinburgh, Scotland.
Yeah.
And that is at least like 45 minutes later.
Yeah.
In between we get like a little, I think there's like a little, there's a bunch of flashbacks.
How many flashbacks are in this movie?
Five or six, I
think. A lot.
Those flashbacks were carrying a lot of heavy lifting because Jacob had never been in this franchise
with
before.
Actors
he was
we don't know, by the way,
right,
too.
Right.
So, yeah.
Would those flashbacks have been more effective if they had de-aged Vin and John Cena?
In this movie, maybe, because this movie could get away with it where other movies couldn't because everything in this movie is ridiculous. I don't know. I just thought they had so much heavy lifting to do in that section that I got bored with it.
Why would you cast somebody that's 5'4" to play John Cena who would grow, what, 3 feet, you know, to tower over?
I kept trying to figure out, like, wait a minute, why is Dom's younger brother a foot shorter than he is when John Cena is a giant?
Yeah exactly. I think I know where you might be falling short on this, and maybe you said it and I just didn't pick up on it. This movie has no stakes. Like, if you, like, look at Fate, I think it was Fate, where Charlize Theron kidnaps Dom's baby, right?
Yep.
You know, those are pretty high stakes.
Yes.
You know, Fast Five, you know, there's a crazy heist in Brazil. Those are high stakes. This movie is just...
It wasn't that they weren't high stakes. It was that they weren't personal.
Yeah.
And I don't know that we ever really felt, as all the heavy lifting the flashbacks did, I don't know if I ever really felt that Dom Toretto and his brother had this relationship. I wanted to see the relationship
ended. Well, I never
thought
they were brothers.
But it was frustrating because all of the work they put in with the flashbacks were with other actors. So we never really got a really good moment with Vin and John Cena where we could feel that there was a relationship and it was strained and it needed mending. I think they have one scene in the movie where they pull guns on each other at some like palace in Scotland at like a party. And there's a couple lines of dialogue. And that I think is their only scene together until basically the end of the movie.
Yeah,
and that I think was frustrating because that's the central conflict. And if you're not invested in that, I can totally get why you guys would check out. For me, I liked all of the little connective tissue and like the world building. Like, oh, this character's coming back from this movie and he's a rocket scientist now for some reason. Okay, cool. That's fun. And then Jordana Brewster's coming in and she has this to say. I kind of was interested in these people and I was just enjoying like the low key, no action. But I'm a fan of this franchise. And I think if you weren't, I can easily see why.
Yeah.
Check out.
Yeah. All right. So this is going to get to what may be my least popular opinion as it relates to this movie. I think I may have said it on the last movie of his we reviewed. I'm not sure. I don't think John Cena is an actor. I've had the sneaking suspicion that he's really good at fulfilling. You know, connecting the dots with acting, but not really performing. And I think there are several reasons the main plot line of this, the brother plot line, doesn't work. I think he's one of them. And
not only would I agree with that, I feel like Vin Diesel's in that same category.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to say. Vin Diesel kind of out-acts him a couple times in this movie. And that's
Vin's more capable, and he's certainly been playing this character for enough years, 20. To have kind of got the Dom Toretto look down. But yeah, I feel like this movie is missing like a certain charisma from any of the lead besides Tyrese Gibson. Like we don't have a Paul Walker, we don't have a Kurt Russell, we don't even have Charlize Theron is in it, and she's really charismatic as her villain.
But she's so wasted in this movie.
Very underutilized. And yeah, I think all the best movies of this franchise have had really charismatic villains or really charismatic leads. And the best ones, 5 and 7, had the best of both. We had Jason Statham and Dwayne Johnson. Like they were fantastic as villains.
Man, you could feel that emptiness here. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's a big part of why the central conflict didn't work. And this is pretty much entirely propped up by the heroes and the spectacle. And if you don't buy into those two things,
you end up like me.
Actually, I think Aaron is the most surprising for the simple fact that John and I both think that stylistically this is no different from any of the other movies in the later half.
I agree. That is the point of contention and interest. And it could just be psychological. It could be, you know, I'm running on little sleep when I saw it today. You know, like there's so many human factors that can play into this stuff. But yeah, it felt very different to me. It just like none of the jokes were landing for me. The Tyrese ludicrous stuff, just which in other movies has been a nice little, you know, comic side relief. Like, none of that stuff seemed funny to me.
I would love to quickly point that out because at one point, Tyrese's character, basically breaking the fourth wall, almost figuratively and literally, he mentions like, hey, guys, have you noticed that we've never even been hurt?
I wanted to mention that too. Like,
and he's – so there. This is known on TV Tropes and in writing as hanging a lampshade where you directly call attention to something that you – to in order to get the audience not – to criticize. You criticize it before they get a chance
to.
You draw attention to it now. Well, if the characters are aware that this is unbelievable, implausible, and they are literally invincible superheroes, then I can no longer fault them for that because they are self-aware of it. But like Tyrese does so much lampshade hanging throughout this franchise. He's done now 4 or 5 movies in a row. Like he might as well be an interior decorator because like without him in the movie, the whole time you're going, oh, come on. They're going to space, but he's in there before you saying exactly the same thing.
Yeah, but in this case,
it kind of works, but it kind of irks me because I'm like,
it has in the past. But again, what he's doing in this movie is the next level of that, right? Like, it's literally saying, guys, are we superheroes?
Yeah, all the fan theories really that we've joked about.
Does he really believe that? Like, what are we supposed to take from that other than I'm saying it before you can? I'm wondering, is this movie going to have, like, the guts to actually be like, oh, we are super, like, you know, like go there somehow. But, you know,
I honestly, there was like a 30% chance in the back of my mind, like, oh my God, they're going to do it.
Right.
They're going to like reveal a thing and they show a flashback from like episode 4.
I would have actually respected that quite a bit.
Where they just show a thing in flashback, like, oh yeah, back when they were dragging that safe through Rio, they went through a portal and got superpowers and they didn't know about it until like.
Or somebody injected them all with a serum and they didn't know about
Or in the very first movie, whenever Paul Walker gets hit in the back of the head with the shotgun, he's just been having a, you know, a dream
this whole time.
You know, like what the last 3 seasons of Archer have been.
The entire Fast and Furious franchise is part of the Tommy Westfall universe. We're all in the daydream of an autistic kid and sane elsewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to just wake up at the end and it's all a dream.
Are they really going to combine this in the Jurassic World universe?
What?
There are rumors that Universal Pictures wants to combine their two most lucrative franchises, Jurassic Park and Fast and Furious, with some crossover movies. And honestly, I'm here for it. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
No.
I think it would work. I think like they've already gone to space. What's left?
I don't know. There's a difference.
To quit. Stop.
They've already said there's going to be at least 2 more movies in the main franchise. So Fast 10 and 11.
10 and 11.
Not to mention probably a couple more spinoffs. Probably a spinoff with all the ladies. Probably another Hobbs and Shaw. We could probably get like a Tokyo Drift spinoff with those characters.
My keyboard goes all the way up to F12. So, you know, like there's room for a few more for sure. I don't know.
You know, there was an old, old show from back in, I think, the 70s or 80s. It was an old animated show called Cadillacs and Dinosaurs. And whenever you were talking about how they were going to mix those two franchises, I thought, like, oh, they're not going to do Cadillacs and Dinosaurs, are they? But it sounds like they're going to do Cadillacs and Dinosaurs.
I mean, it could work. I could totally see Mr. Nobody and or Jeff Goldblum calling up Dom Tredelec. Dom, the dinosaurs are on the loose in L.A. We need your team. And then, and then smash cut to Dom in a charger racing alongside a raptor trying to pull a pit maneuver on him to get the raptor to fall. Like, I could totally see it, and it would work. And more importantly, we would all pay money to see it, and I think you both know that. This would make $1 billion.
The difference is, and I'm not usually one to go down this road, and so I'm kind of speaking against my own belief here. I'm being a little bit hypocritical here. But the difference is Fast and Furious, the first movie, was a more dramatic actual movie than
it was Point Break than
these are. But the original Jurassic Park is a classic. Like, it is like one of the greatest feats of cinema ever. And so to do this to Fast and Furious, okay. You pull in my Jurassic Park, and there's part of me that's
I understand the it's going to sully the good name argument, but I feel like at this point, Jurassic Park has had one masterpiece, one or two decent sequels, but like on a whole, the majority of Jurassic Park has been not great.
The sullying has already happened, is what you're saying.
Yes. I think and we already have one more. Fallen Kingdom was the last one.
Yeah.
No, this
Jurassic. What's the next one called? Jurassic World, The Lost Park?
Like Extinction,
Swapping
names
from older movies. By the time any crossover movie did happen, I feel like Jurassic Park's ticket had already been punched and it's past any. Yeah. I want to say there was one more crossover opportunity that I heard rumored, but I'm trying to think of what are the universal property that would have been. Not Harry Potter. Transformers, maybe? Probably Transformers. And that could probably work.
I mean, Fast and Furious and Transformers makes a ton of sense to me, much more than
Jurassic Park. That seems totally normal.
Yeah.
Dom Toretto driving Bumblebee.
Dominion, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
This is where the dinosaurs are part of our world.
Yeah, I'm actually in the camp with Aaron, because it would feel like if you were to mix Fast and Furious with Jurassic Park, to me it would feel like finding out that Brian is actually the grandson of Indiana Jones, and they tried to create, you know, an Indiana Jones, you know, kind of where they have to drive cars to go and steal relics or something like that. I got to quit talking because, for all I know, there's an executive out there who's like,
I was going to
say,
you're just giving him ideas, man. You're just giving him ideas.
You joke about that, but the space thing is literally like an old internet meme. We all joked about that, and the writers were like, you know what? We're going to call your bluff. we're gonna send him to low orbit in a Pontiac Fiero with a rocket strapped to the head and just call it a day.
Yep. We sure are. Maybe on a different day, I'm still in, but as of right now, I feel like this franchise that had kind of won me back and I was having a good time with, I feel like I'm kind of out right now.
What is the fast metaphor for jumping the shark?
It's a great question. Probably literally jumping a shark, I would imagine.
Jumping the sub? Is that where it went off the rails after the submarine in the last one? Jumping between the Abu Dhabi skyscrapers?
Sure. I think the sub's right. I think the skyscraper one was kind of cool. The sub one is kind of, it's a little bit more like, you know, stretch. So, yeah, jumping the sub, if you will. Yeah. So speaking of driving on ice.
Hey,
I couldn't pass it up. No, before we get there, though, any final thoughts on F9? Any
post-credit scenes?
One last thing. Were
there was one post-credit scene.
Was it important? I haven't seen it, so.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. It'll probably set up the next one.
Okay.
Yeah.
I imagine it's Charlize Theron. Theron crawling out of rubble.
I'll just say it's Statham related.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
I'll have to check that out.
One thing I did like, a very tiny detail I feel like a lot of people might have missed, but the movie opens with the 75th anniversary Universal Studios logo from 1990,
mm-hmm.
because the very next shot, the opening shot of the movie, is a flashback set in 1989.
89, yep.
And when the movie started, I'm like, that's the old logo.
Mm-hmm. I had the same thought.
And it had like it had sort of like a film grain on it.
Yes.
And for a beat, I was like, they didn't load the wrong. I know I haven't been to a movie in a year and a half, but like they know how to do this still, right?
Right. Yeah.
But thankfully, it was just like it was a nice little nod to here's the old logo because the movie starts 30 years ago.
I originally thought the stain on my screen was some sort of digital
part of the granular
kind of thing that they were doing to make that old footage look old. Turns out it was not.
I always like when the studio logo incorporates into the film somehow. Mm-hmm. The Indiana Jones movies where they start the Paramount logo and becomes like the mm-hmm. mountain behind it or Water World. Literally the Universal logo fills with water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love when they incorporate it in a fun way like that. So I wanted to point that mm-hmm. out.
I guess for my one last thing, I will say I'm always very interested in how this movie maintains the Brian character as a living, breathing part of the universe. You know, there's some winks and nods in here for sure. And it feels so weird because, you know, in a world where Paul Walker was still with us, he would absolutely be in these movies. You know what I mean? Like, and so I don't know. There's something that breaks the reality for me anytime they kind of bring that character back in, but I get it. You know, it's part of the universe. He's still around.
There's a couple mentions here and there, but the very last shot, the very last moment of the movie,
it's mostly what I'm talking about.
Is a very direct reference to him, and it's the kind of thing that, on the plus side, didn't feel exploitative. It didn't feel unnecessary. In fact, it's the kind of thing like, of course Brian would be at this scene.
Of course he would.
Like, it feels very weird for him not to be there.
Yeah.
But you don't want to, like, body double CGI him either because that's kind of disrespectful. No. So I felt like the way they did it was actually really nice. And I thought it was, like, a genuinely sweet moment. And that the movie sort of trades on real life drama to kind of bring their own emotion that they can't manufacture on their own. And I think by kind of pointing that out, as you said, it's like, oh, yeah, that's right. This is – you can't not mention him. At the same time, by doing so, you kind of break that immersion like, oh, that's right. Paul Walker's not with us anymore, and I'm bummed out again.
Yeah, yeah. So there's always that part of it for me. But, you know, maybe I'll have to give this another look as somebody, unlike Andrew, who has enjoyed kind of this turn into the ridiculous a little bit, turning into the skid, so to speak. I have enjoyed that. So it was a very strange experience for me today to be like, this is a terrible, terrible movie and I am not having fun. So maybe I'll give it another chance. But
Andrew, do you have a final thought?
Just the post-credit scene. I always like to let people know when there is one.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, there you
I've
go.
I've talked enough about this movie.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, we're going into the ice road here, and it's another movie about driving cars crazy and crazy car stunts and all that kind of stuff. And I kind of wish I had done something like that for the Best Ever Challenge because we were on a nice streak where our Best Ever Challenge was about both movies, like for the last 2 weeks. It's, you know, I think it was, you know, movies that start with IN, and both of the movies that week started with IN, and but no, we wanted to give Liam Neeson some spotlight, so he's not an F9 as far as I know.
No, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's in the next one.
He'd be
a great villain. He really would.
I agree.
If they combine the Taken franchise with the Fast franchise.
I'm in.
Let's do it. Let's talk about the ice road.
You heard about the cave-in?
Yeah.
I'm putting together a rescue mission.
We have 26 trapped miners who are running out of air.
I need 300 feet of pipe delivered up there in under 30 hours. Can you make it happen?
Says you had experience on the ice road.
Yep.
He's a mechanic?
One of the best.
Sweet Jesus. Give me $50. One of my drivers just became available.
What's it for?
Bail.
What?
Told you this wasn't going to be easy.
I'm in.
After a remote diamond mine collapses in far northern Canada, an ice road driver must lead an impossible rescue mission over a frozen ocean to save the trapped miners. This is on Netflix, starring Liam Neeson. I should mention F9 is only in theaters for the time being. But yeah, this one is on Netflix. You've got Liam Neeson, Lawrence Fishburne. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else in here you'll really
Matt
know.
Matt McCoy.
Yeah.
Who you might remember from the last couple episodes of the Police Academy franchise.
There you go. There you go.
I think it was the last movie I saw him in was Police Academy well, 7.
Amber Midthunder is... she's from Hell or High Water and Legion, so you might know her from there.
Yes. She did look familiar. What did you guys think? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? Andrew, I will let you go first.
High side of didn't like it, close to okay.
Okay. John?
I liked it.
Nice.
Right in the middle. Not really high or low.
I think I'm closer to Andrew. I'm going to go low side of just okay is where I'm going to end up on this one. Yeah, let's talk about it a little bit. John, it sounds like, again, that you liked it more than either Andrew or I, so why don't you kick us off?
I think I'm just having a good weekend and I'm in a good mood, so that helps considerably.
John's like, movies are back!
I got some good personal news this week, so I've just sort of been riding high.
Hey. And, well, congratulations.
Thank you. So yeah, I guess I just kind of went into this fully ready to appreciate like a dumb Liam Neeson action thriller on Netflix, and he's done about a dozen of these in the last 10 years. Ice Road is no different. It's a very simple concept. It feels like a poor man's version of The Wages of Fear or Sorcerer. And I've only seen the former, but if you haven't, one of my all-time favorite black and white French films. Like, holy crap, that movie is as tense, as suspenseful as they get. And it's a similar concept to this. You have to deliver precious cargo on a time limit across dangerous terrain. And all of that stuff I felt really worked. Early on, where the trucks are driving over the ice and there's like talk about the waves and the pressure. It's like, this is really interesting. This is real world stakes with real world drama and consequences. But then they introduce this like murderous bad guy.
Yes.
And it's just like, twirling. And he literally like a mustache twirling villain. And it's kind of like, oh, okay. So it is going to just devolve back into like a regular Liam Neeson action thriller. And I kind of just wanted more of the truck driving.
Yeah.
That is my biggest negative with this movie.
Yeah. And I didn't like the villain. I didn't feel like the motivations lined up. Like I get like the corporate angle, but it just, that felt flat for me. But the action and I felt like the general premise, at least until like the halfway mark, was all really captivating. And I kind of fell off by the end, but I think it still sort of stuck the landing enough that I would give it like a soft recommend.
No, this is a movie that really didn't know what it had. It should have been comfortable with saying, you know what? Man against the elements, those stakes are high enough. They didn't believe in themselves into thinking that they could make an entire movie based on that premise of man versus nature, or, you know, the intelligence of, you know, what these truck drivers have to do. And it's funny because last week, whenever we were saying the movies we were going to be reviewing for this week, I joked, because neither Aaron and I knew what Ice Road was about, I joked it was Ice Road Truckers the movie. And it's Ice Road Truckers the movie.
Not far off.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, to that criticism, Andrew, it's kind of like, think The Perfect Storm, but there's a double crosser on board the boat. And it's like, why? No, we don't need that. Like, that's so, the threat is enough on its own. And I think more than that, the movie wasn't able to go more than 10 minutes without introducing another hiccup. And it's like, just let one of these issues breathe. Every single consequence and every single obstacle they face is enough to kill everyone on this mission. And they go through like 8 of them. There's avalanches and like pressure waves and a guy with a gun. Like, there's all these things they have to get through. It's like, slow down. Just give us one of these things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a moment early on, like one of the first obstacles they run into before the whole mustache twirling. And I'm like, you know what? I'm actually kind of excited right now. And is this kind of intense, you know? Mm-hmm. But then they didn't believe that was enough.
Right.
I didn't get it because, A, the whole element of man versus nature is intense, right? And then you add on that a time limit, like you have to get to this place, you know, before a certain time.
And the ice is melting. It's late April. There's a lot of built-in stakes here.
You don't need any of this extra corporate, you know, snidely whiplash stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I am 100% with you guys. The reason I'm in kind of, you know, it was just okay – as opposed to didn't like it, is because of the Ice Road stuff. Like, I felt like, oh, yeah. I haven't seen this before. I'm hearing about mm-hmm. things that, whether they're true or not, are interesting to me. That pressure wave thing was very interesting to me. The idea yeah. of when you're driving on ice, you have to drive the exact right speed so that you don't create a pressure wave by going too fast, but that you don't break the ice by going too slow. Because that's really fascinating.
There was a little bit of exposition in this involving bobbleheads, and I was legitimately like, that's really neat.
Yeah.
And I was so excited for the payoff. And when we did get the payoff, it was like, oh, at this point, like, I've seen everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Big deal.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I agree with the secondary point that both of you made, that the movie doesn't trust that it has something interesting enough without throwing yeah. in Snidely Whiplash and Snidely Whiplash Jr. And it's just, it's, I didn't need it. It just didn't need it.
No.
And if there was a, see, here's, if you want some of the sabotage, which I can understand how you can create tension with sabotage and create situations that they need to get out of, all that kind of stuff with sabotage. I don't know that it needs to be connected so high. I think it could just be the, you know, person from the insurance company trying to, that's what I thought it might be at first, you know, it was just like trying to take a loss on, you know, the trucks, not necessarily kill people or whatever, just, you know, trying to sabotage yeah. the trucks so that they could take a big, you know, settlement, you know, from that.
That was like a logic issue I struggled with for like the first half of the movie, because the whole time after they sort of revealed the villain and his motivation, I was like, but why, though? Why do they right. want to kill a mine full of people? And it wasn't until later, I'm like, just profits? That's it? They're willing to kill 29 people for money? That's it? It felt so, like, beyond the pale to me that I – and they didn't establish these corporate types as, like so evil.
Mm-hmm.
They were just, like, dudes that were in an office. And they didn't – I felt like there was a really strong disconnect between what they were doing and what – was appropriate for their characters.
And for those that are yelling at their podcast player about how naive we are not to think that corporate people would kill us for money. We're talking about active murder here, which, again, maybe we are being naive, but that doesn't seem to be of the stories that come out what it's usually
about. And it's not just that I had an issue with that. It's that they didn't establish their characters as being, like, so money-hungry evil
mm-hmm.
that this yeah. felt – that didn't feel like a normal decision to them. It felt to me like,
and again, I guess I need to say this again. We're kind of spoiling this a little bit, but the movie never treats this as a secret. I guess it does for like 5 minutes, but it's not something the movie is interested in, you know, using in that way. So yeah.
What kind of mining corporation in the Great North has a hitman on retainer? That's what I want to know.
It's a good question.
I think there's a line where he just says, I work, that's my department or something.
This movie starts off with hands down the worst CGI special effect ever. When the mine goes off, you know, and like the explosions happen mm-hmm. that causes what potentially could have been a very interesting movie. It looked like Sharknado level bad CGI.
Yeah.
Now I am so glad you brought this up, because I have a really fun story to tell about this. I am friends with somebody on Letterboxd that managed to see an early work print version of Ice Road back in March. This was like 4 months ago.
Okay.
And I was like, dude, how are you reviewing this movie? And he's like, oh, it looks like one of the editors accidentally left their Vimeo work print public. And this is the version. This is like a low res file that they would share around with the other editors to get feedback and whatever. So this was like pre-viz. That was the finished cut, but no sound mix.
Right.
And most of the visuals weren't pasted in there. So I took a look at it and I watched like a good 10-15 minutes or so of this work print. The whole thing has like burned on in watermark, like property of Ice Road Productions. And the beginning of the movie starts with like literally Adobe stock Getty images. Like stock footage of this mine, and then there's this dump truck and this fake looking explosion, and it literally there's like some text that says explosion visual here, like they're going to add it in later. And like, I kid you not, Andrew, it did not improve much from what I saw in like the so 4 month work print to what actually got released.
Oh man.
And it just, cause this was a clip. Only a few, 85 people had watched it on Vimeo when I got a hold of it. And I was like, oh my God, I'm seeing something that like less than 100 people have glimpsed yet. And I was so tempted to just tweet it, but that would have been very wrong and unethical. So I kept it to myself, and I'm finally able to share now that seeing the early version was, it was interesting too from like a production standpoint, seeing what they had finished and where the green screen was going to be. And all the stuff where they're in the office building, just looking out the window, that was like in a parking lot. And they have to replace all that. And I'm like, oh, I guess that's a visual effect. I wouldn't have thought about that. And everything with Liam Neeson on the ice road, there's like a building right next to them the whole time. And I just love seeing that like behind the scenes stuff. But the visuals were so janky and unfinished. And the finished movie, I don't know that it was that much stronger. There's especially towards the climax of this movie, there's like a big visual moment. Involving a truck, and it did not look good at all.
No.
And I was kind of like, ooh, really? Wow. Because the movie was almost finished 4 months ago, so what have they been working on?
Yeah.
I don't know.
But there's always things. It's always time. It's budget. I'm sure the visual effects guys were doing their best. But this one might have needed a little more time in the oven, I think.
This movie also is dependent on us buying into the relationship between two brothers, as is F9. How did you feel about that relationship, the mental hardship of the brother? Gertie and Mike. How did you feel about the Gertie and Mike thing?
I you know what? I bought into it, and I liked it. There's a moment in this where... I'll just say Liam Neeson's character makes like a hard shift that kind of caught me off guard. And I was
I think I know exactly what you're, referring. I'm like, that was kind of mean. And I don't like that he did that.
Yeah. But it's not that it was mean. I can deal with a character being mean. It was mean out of nowhere. Like, you know what Gertie, he has aphasia. We can say that where, he thinks what he's saying sounds normal, but the words that are coming out of his mouth don't quite match up to what makes sense.
So yeah, so as a result, he has a disability as an adult, and people treat him differently and sort of judge him and look down on him.
Yeah.
And Liam Neeson has to sort of look out for his disabled brother. And the tension it creates feels real, but some of the emotional outbursts felt like sort of vindictive for no reason. I was kind of like, okay, that was
But no, I actually bought into the Gertie mic. It kind of worked for me. And
I liked it enough.
I was like, you know, I want these guys to be okay.
Yeah, I liked it. And again, it was something the movie had that it didn't seem to trust. You know, like, the movie had enough elements that they could have built an interesting story around without having to be so over the top, I think. And yeah, I think it very much kind of a Rain Man kind of feel to it, you know, with him being so good at mechanical stuff and, you know, Liam Neeson in the Tom Cruise role in some ways.
Which I don't think Gertie was like Rain Man-ish. I think aphasia doesn't affect like your mental fortitude and stuff. It's just your ability to speak.
Yeah, I meant the relationship dynamic is what I'm talking about as being Rain Man like.
That he's sort of gifted in mechanical ways, but can't communicate well. So he needs Liam to sort of be his proxy and his guard, his ward.
Yeah.
I mean, the movie is very average. I think if you like Liam Neeson straight to video thrillers, if you've seen the last four or five he's put out, is more of the same. I think this is probably right down the not his worst, not his best, but I think it's worth the 90 something minutes.
It's interesting that Liam Neeson decided to be an action hero after he was 50 years old. You know?
Well, he turned 70 this year, right? Doesn't he turn 70 this year?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
70 is the new 50, he says, hoping it's true.
And quite frankly, he can still get it.
Yeah.
And I still like it.
Yeah.
He's good.
Yeah, absolutely. Any final thoughts? I don't really have anything else to mention. If you guys do, that's fine. Otherwise, we'll move on.
I think the big thing really was it squandered what it had, tried to get more, and it kind of fell flat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Truck, truck, truck.
Truck, truck, truck. Truck, truck. Before we head on to the Best Ever Challenge, wanted to remind you of the Sift Pop membership that is available to you. We already mentioned the Sift Pop post show that we're doing this week on ranking the Fast and Furious movies, or at least kind of talking about those rankings. You can check that out at the Patreon, patreon.com/siftpop, as a member of the Sift Pop website. You get all sorts of fun stuff, but you can check all the differences there at the patreon.com/siftpop website. And thank you to those who are already SiftPop members, and thank you to you for even considering it and heading over there and checking it out.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
All right, let's move into the Best Ever Challenge. We're doing Best Ever Liam Neeson Movies, as mentioned. We'll go number 5 to number 1 and talk about any honorable mentions we have. I'm going to kick us off this week and start us with my number 5, which is Batman Begins.
Nice.
Honorable
mention.
Trump.
Oh, okay. All right. John's going to trump Batman Begins. I guess we'll go to you, Andrew. What's your number 5?
This is a movie that most people either hate or really appreciate. I'm going to go with The Gray.
Trump.
Wow. We're just mentioning John's favorite Liam Neeson movies, man.
Yeah.
Fine. Damn, John, if you wanted to go first, all you had to do was say, I want to go first.
I went first in the last two segments. So
now I'm mad, so I'm going to trump whatever you say.
Yeah, whatever you say, I'm going to trump it. John, what do you got at number 5?
Next 3 days.
Oh, not trumping that.
Oh, okay.
I don't even know if I've seen that.
That's and the Russell Crowe one, right?
This is, now that I think about it, this is actually kind of a cheat. I feel he's barely in this movie.
How this game works. It's not if they're in the movie long enough.
That's right.
I'll tell you right now, my number one, he's in the movie for like 3 minutes.
All right. Well, I'll go with it. I'll go with it then. The next 3 days is a Russell Crowe actioner with Elizabeth Banks, his wife. Gets, I think, locked away in prison for a murder she may not have committed, but may have committed. And Russell Crowe, the entire thing, it's like reverse Shawshank. He wants to get her out of prison by sort of getting into it. And he goes to Liam Neeson to ask for advice because Liam Neeson is like an expert prison escape artist. And there's a great scene where he sits down with Russell Crowe and explains everything he's going to – you're going to need fake passports. You're going to need all this money. You're going to need $500,000. You're going to be able to do this, this, and this. You're going to need to make decisions that you are not willing to make right now. And you have to be able to put everything behind and run to another country. And it's a really great like procedural prison escape movie but told from the perspective of somebody from the outside. And I really dug it. Big recommend. Yeah.
All right, moving on to my number 4. This is where, and I will not be surprised if I'm trumped, this is where I have taken at number
Trump.
4. John, Trump. Still trumping. Like, how many slots do you have left, man?
Yeah, seriously, this doesn't even make sense.
I'm just playing the trumpet over here. I'm just...
All right, Andrew, what do you got at number 4?
This is where I have John, Kingdom of Heaven.
Nope, no, you're all set there.
Oh, wow, I get to talk. This is crazy.
Do it.
Okay. This is specifically the re-released the director's cut because the director's cut is so much better than the original theatrical release, which was
We had this conversation, I think, on an episode a few months back. I forget why we were talking about director's cut. I think the Zack Snyder episode.
No, it was the Snyder cut. Snyder cut, yeah. Man, this cut of the movie is so good that it makes me mad that this wasn't the theatrical release because everybody who saw it in theaters, nobody's going to want to rewatch like the 3-hour version of this movie. But It's so good, and yeah, I highly, highly recommend it. Edward Norton as the Leper King Baldwin is just amazing. He's so good.
Yeah.
Really good movie.
And the director's cut is the extra long one, like the 3+ hour one, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
I will make a note that when I do watch this to see that version specifically.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, John, what do you got at your number four?
My number four is The Gray.
There we go.
Okay.
Andrew, would you like to keep talking about the Wolf movie?
You got to hire.
Yeah, so you've got to hire. You go
just
first.
Pick up the pieces.
This, I think we all went into expecting another like low budget direct-to-video Liam Neeson action thriller. But this one was a lot more like psychological, a lot more introverted and about like his own psyche. And it is not just like a survival wilderness movie. It is a lot of that. And those parts are great. But so much of the stuff that works here is like him wrestling with his own concepts of like religion and life and value and coming to terms with, frankly, death, like coming to terms with the fact like I might die alone in this mountain surrounded by wolves. And there's just some great stuff in this movie where he sort of very vocally and very directly confronts his faith in God and like putting him in this position.
Oh, that's
some really
great.
Good stuff, legitimately emotional and powerful. And you kind of forgot for a decade, like, oh yeah, Liam Neeson is a solid actor.
Mm-hmm.
He's just been typecast in his like late 60s, but like he can really get it sometimes. And yeah, The Gray is really good.
Yeah, that scene you're talking about where he's like screaming up at the sky, show yourself, show me something real. And
yeah,
then he's
that
like,
is good.
Fine, I'll just do it on my own.
Yeah, you know? That was good.
I love this movie for the simple fact that the wolves aren't portrayed in a realistic manner. They're hyper monsterized. And that's on purpose because they're not supposed to represent nature or anything. I think that these wolves are more to represent like inner suffering and, you know, turmoil and stuff like that. So they have to be, you know, these terrifying creatures. Like they don't even act or even look like the alpha wolf in this movie. This all black wolf looks more like Gamork than anything really, but it's a really good movie.
The picture definitely has like a dreamlike quality to it. And I'm sure there's probably film theory circling around that suggests everything after the plane crash is all just in his head. And he actually died in the first 3 minutes. And the whole movie is like some weird afterlife, trial he has to go through. But yeah, I kind of dig that. Everything in it feels a little ethereal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love the ending of this movie with that just that quiet piano score. And he's like taping the knife and those little shot bottles to his hand. And he recites his father's poem. I'm actually getting emotional thinking about it. This is crazy.
No, it's legitimately a great ending. It's really powerful. Yeah.
He's reciting that his father's poem, The Once More Into the Gray. And then this is where a lot of people hate this movie. It just ends. It quits.
Yeah.
And this is a movie I think a lot of people don't realize has a post-credit scene.
Yeah.
So definitely check out the Gray. I think it's a great movie.
I love it as well. It is certainly in my honorable mentions. But yeah, that's one to check out if you haven't seen it. The Gray.
Yeah. Definitely misunderstood.
Right, you're number four then.
My number three, I think, were two.
I'm sorry, that's right. Three. You went first. That's right.
Yes, because
it felt like I went first.
You keep trumping me, John. My number three is Widows. This is a phenomenal movie. I was just thinking about this movie the other day, and some of the choices that Steve McQueen makes with the camera work in this movie came back to me. That shot where the camera's on the hood of the car as it travels from the inner city to, you know, from a wealthy home to the inner city, and it's like two blocks away, you know, kind of thing.
It is a crazy shot. Beautiful cinematography.
And I love the performances here. There's a lot going on here that I really, really like. So Widows is my number three.
I'm going to stick that on my watch list because I hadn't even heard of that one.
Oh, you hadn't gotten around to seeing Widows. Yeah.
I don't know if I've heard of it.
No, it's a female heist movie. I know we're talking about Liam Neeson, but this is like what's her name? Yeah. Viola Davis.
Yeah. I'm looking at it now on Letterboxd, and legitimately, I have like no recollection of this. It only came out a few years ago. Past my radar.
It was definitely high on the awards discussion that year, but it was kind of high. It was high in awards discussion in that way where it didn't really make a lot of waves, but it was just kind of in the conversation. And so, yeah, it probably fell.
You had me at Liam Neeson.
Yeah.
All right, you're number three, Andrew.
This will get trumped, I know. Schindler's List.
Yeah.
Trump.
That'll be Trump.
Yeah.
So I think at this point, all of my movies have already been revealed.
Well, then go with what's your number three?
I don't think
three?
You can physically Trump anymore.
No, I've run out. I've run out of picks.
Mathematically possible. Impossible.
My number three is Batman Begins.
Okay.
I think it's very hard not to love this movie. It is one of the absolute best origin stories for any superhero. And the way they create these characters seemingly from scratch, like the world's greatest detective is someone we had seen 100 times before, played by many different actors, but Christopher Nolan's adaptation and bringing Batman back to life here was so good and so effective and so like grounded and authentic and gritty. And Liam Neeson plays a big part as the villain, Ra's al Ghul, as this just like, I don't know, mountain man samurai that seems to know all Batman's weaknesses. It was great. Andrew, I think you had it at what, your number four or your five?
I had it at number five. I had
it
at number five.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I, you know, I mean, it's Nolan, right? And doing superhero stuff. And so it's always going to be interesting as Christian Bale doing incredible. Like, it was just kind of like, oh, Batman has been refreshed in a new take, a new way. And it's really well done. Very, very well done. So, yeah.
As somebody who prides himself on, you know, loving DC Comics and especially Batman, I think that the Batman Begins, for as many times as we've seen it, the origin, you know, the alley, you know, with the pearls and the gun and stuff like that, I think
I've been going through the animated movies, they still show that alley scene like in every one.
Yeah I think that Nolan did it best. I think that Nolan did it best because before that he establishes Thomas and Martha, you know, in a way to where, you know, you get to understand them more. And it really makes more sense as to why Bruce grows up to be who he is. I think that out of every iteration of the Batman, I think Nolan has understood the motivation behind the character the most.
Yeah. Yep. It's great. That's great. Yeah, I had it at number five, and John had it at number three. So we're on to our number twos. This is where I have the Lego movie.
Same.
I love this movie. And I think primarily a lot of that love has to do with how it surprised me. And I don't just mean plot-wise, although certainly there are some surprises. I mean, heart-wise, I was not ready for the real, just absolute beauty that is in this movie towards the end, and
it comes out of nowhere.
It comes out of nowhere, and it's a real magic trick. It's a real magic trick what this movie does.
John, your audio's muted.
Legitimately, one of my favorite like cinema experiences is the ending of the Lego Movie.
Yeah,
because it turns on such. Like a dime, and it's like, oh my gosh, and it's so good, that like last 15-20 minutes where they kind of make that
Aaron,
reveal.
I was sitting in the theater like, I wasn't ready for this.
it's
my number two
stuff.
As well.
Oh, nice.
It's shockingly a brilliant, brilliant movie, on top of it being one of the funniest movies ever made.
It's super
It
fun.
Has something to say.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Modern classic. I think we will look back many years with good reverence at the Lego Movie.
So that was my number two as well. So, John, what do you got at number two?
Taken.
There you go.
The original Taken, as the sequels were very, very bad. But that first installment, the one that kicked off Liam Neeson's action career, like the back half of his catalog, there's something so visceral and satisfying and gratifying about his character, Brian Mills, who just doesn't even stop to question the bad. He just shoots and keeps going. There's no breathing room in this entire, it's like a very, very lean, like 88 minute film. And it is just breakneck from the moment his daughter's kidnapped. It's just basically one long fight sequence. And there's a great scene where he meets one of the heavies, one of the bad guys towards the end. And he corners him in an elevator, and the bad guy immediately starts like begging for his life. And before he can even say like a third word, Liam shoots him in the kneecap. He's like, tell me what I want to know. And then he starts begging for his life, and he shoots him again. And I'm like, yes, I love this. Just waste this guy. Like, he has no information that you even – and the impatience and like the exactness of his character makes it so easy to root for him. Just lay waste to everyone in Paris that is connected to your daughter's kidnapping and just get to the end. It's like almost like a modern day Die Hard. Like, it's such a simplified, distilled action movie with no fat, no plot holes. It just works straight through.
I wonder if, and I had this at number four, you had it at number two. I wonder if you could almost say that this entire kind of second chapter, second half of Liam Neeson's career is due to his proficiency and delivery of that phone call scene. Like, that
almost entirely, yes.
Yeah, like that one scene, I think, launched him into like four, five, six different movies he's done over the last
five or six. He's done like 25 of these.
Whatever.
He did this. The Ice Road was like the third movie he's done in the last 12 months.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if you guys saw The Marksman or The Honest Thief. Those both came out in the last 12, 13 months. Yeah. And those are pretty decent, too.
Yeah.
The phone call speech in Taken did for Neeson's sort of resurrection of career that Airplane did for, I'm sorry, Liam Neeson and Leslie Nielsen. I almost got those two mixed up. The phone call did for Liam Neeson what Airplane did for Leslie Nielsen, where he was a dramatic, serious actor for 30 years.
Yeah.
And then he switched to comedy, and then his entire career shifted. And the back 20 years of his life, he only did comedies, and he did them great.
Yeah.
And Liam had a similar sort of transformation there.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Taken gets a lot of credit for that, for sure.
And it should. It should.
Fun fact, I think that's the first movie I saw with Danae in theaters.
Oh, nice. So. Very interesting.
Yeah.
All right, on to our number ones, mine is Schindler's List. And John, I figured yours was the same. Andrew, you had it at number three. Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird... I know this. You're number one, so you should talk first. But this is a movie that... is difficult to have lower than other movies. Is it one of the most important movies ever made? Yes. But whenever I'm going, there has to be an entertainment element to a movie. I rewatched this like 3 days ago.
Oh, interesting.
And gosh, this is a rough movie.
Do you still cry at the end?
Oh, yeah. Every time that I could have gotten more out, kills. Mm-hmm. It's one of the most brutal movies. Before I let you guys just gush over all this movie, I got a fun story for you. I'm colorblind, so everybody was talking about the girl in the red dress, and I never knew that there was a girl in a red or in a red coat until like I got these like chroma glasses and I watched the movie. And I'm like, oh, red, and I was like pointing it out. So yeah, it's. I'll let you guys talk now.
No, that's really cool. That's really interesting. Schindler's List is Schindler's List, and it's incredible filmmaking. It's incredible performances. It's incredibly important.
I think important is the key word here.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't just like a masterpiece of Spielberg's magnum opus, probably one of the best movies of his very storied career. But it brought the Holocaust, as terrible and horrifying as it is, into something that was accessible, entertainment's probably not the right word, but accessible medium, so that people could see how terrible this was in a way that you don't have to go to a museum and lean over like an age-dividing wall that prevents young kids from seeing some of the real footage that happened there.
Yeah.
It's breathtaking in like the worst way.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Andrew, what do you got at number one?
Yeah, this is my number seven movie of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you, Daniel Day-Lewis and Leonardo DiCaprio. And a three-minute scene with Liam Neeson. I'm going with Gangs of New York.
Yeah, I figured you would. I know you love this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, this movie for me is really close to perfection. When it comes to like... a fascinating, it's a period piece, it's true story in the sense that the events circling around, you know, the war and the Five Points, you know, but you know what was going on with the riots in New York during the Civil War and stuff like that. It's a fascinating movie, and besides There Will Be Blood, this is like one of the greatest performances of all time, and they're both Daniel Day-Lewis. Yeah. So that should let
he
you
has
know.
A habit of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he has a habit of being, you know, a lot
very
of people
good.
Say he was in a lot of people say he was in Lincoln, but I never saw him because they actually went back in time and got Abraham Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, I noticed that. Yeah.
Yeah, but this movie is as Shakespearean as you can get without being Shakespeare. A very powerful revenge film filled with violence, love, and suspense.
Yeah.
And there are moments where you can laugh. I think that everybody in this movie is on their game. It's a great movie. And for me, it is easily Scorsese's best movie.
Very nice. Gangs of New York comes in at number one for Andrew.
Solid pick.
You guys...
Yeah, obviously we'd have to say Schindler's List is the sit-pop choice for the...
Sure, week. Two number ones and a number three. That makes sense. I think it was the only movie on all three of our lists, right?
Might have been. Did somebody not have
you
Batman
didn't have
Begins?
The gray. No, I didn't.
And I didn't
it
have the gray.
It was my first honorable mention.
Yeah.
Wow.
So.
Yeah, quickly, I wanted to mention, Andrew, you touched on with Schindler's List that it's an important movie. And everyone should see it 100%. But it's also not like super enjoyable. Like it's really hard to watch.
Yeah.
Which is why like, yeah, what do you want to watch tonight? Let's put on Schindler's List. Like that's not really how you answer that question. That's like, I'd rather watch something a little more fun that doesn't make me feel sick to my stomach. But it's so necessary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's one of those movies that should be required viewing, but it's difficult to say when somebody should see it.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
That is a good point.
You guys mentioned all of my honorable mentions except for one. The only one that hasn't been mentioned that I had listed was Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, the first Chronicles of Narnia movie.
Oh, neat.
I got a couple.
And Liam Neeson, of course, voiced Aslan in that movie and did so very, very well. I wish the other Chronicles of Narnia movies had been as good as Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe.
It was the only one I saw, so...
Dawn Treader's okay. Caspian is downright terrible. It's just it's like they had no idea what they were doing in Caspian. But that's just a fan of the original books speaking.
There you go.
I have a couple familiar movies in the honorable mention category. Phantom Menace. Mm-hmm. It's definitely not one of the best Star Wars movies, but
Dual Face,
Liam Neeson helps make the Phantom Menace much better.
Yeah.
So I think that deserves some credit. Love Actually is a classic around the holidays, and he's again not really necessarily integral to that film. He's one of the many little disparate threads, but he's really fun.
Mm-hmm.
And a movie many people have not seen, and honestly, it's not even very good, but it's like just really crazy, really bananas, and quite fun. An Irish comedy horror kind of spoof movie called High Spirits.
Hmm.
It's sort of like a zany, slapsticky. I think it's adapted from a play because everything kind of takes place in a haunted castle on Halloween night. And Liam Neeson is one of many very strange, quirky characters in this. And he plays up his Irish accent. It is a lot of fun. This is maybe the kind of movie you get drunk and watch with friends. It came out in the 80s. It's an older movie. I just have to recommend it because it is so weird.
There you go.
High Spirits.
Hey, Andrew, do you have any others?
Yeah, I got two more. Kroll, it's an old 80s fantasy sci-fi movie, which is just weird as all get as those early 80s fantasy movies were. And then a movie that I don't think a lot of people have seen, but I think they would really enjoy is a movie called Rob Roy. Have either of you seen it?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I have, yes.
Yeah.
It's like Poor Man's Braveheart.
Mm-hmm.
It's Poor Man's Braveheart, but... It is It's some of the most realistic sword fighting and sword play you can see in a movie.
There's like a big climactic sword fight that's like 6 or 7 minutes long.
Yeah.
Big unbroken takes. It's some really good stuff.
Tim Roth is great in that movie, and so is Liam Neeson. And it's a good movie.
I'm going to check out Krull, though. That looks fantastically 80s.
It is
just
so
a movie poster.
Fantastically. It is
the movie poster is just.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those kind of like what could I compare it to? Enemy Mine or like a kind of Neverending Story-ish or
a little Labyrinthy, you know,
Labyrinth,
a little bit like
Labyrinth. Yeah, that'd be a really good one too.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's a fun movie. Just don't take it too seriously.
There you go.
I never would.
Nice.
All right, there's our best ever Liam Neeson movies. It is time for The Buried Treasure. I'm going to go first and mention You know what? I'll mention the whole thing, but I will recommend you go find a YouTube clip of the moment I'm about to tell you about. The World Championships for disc golf took place this past weekend, and I'm a big fan of disc golf. I actually watch all the tournaments and root on my favorites, and I love the
that
sport.
That sounds like a line, the way you said it. Like, I've seen all the tournaments of disc golf and stuff,
that's
you
right.
know.
That's right. I've studied them. I've seen them all. But this weekend was the World Championship, and it was an incredible tournament. It's the only tournament in disc golf that is five rounds long. So they play five full rounds of 18 holes. And on the last hole of the fifth round, one of the players was one stroke back and needed to make a birdie to send it into a sudden death playoff. However, his third shot came up very he couldn't even get around the trees that he had to get around. So he was still 250 feet out, and he hit the shot from 250 feet out to force a sudden death playoff.
That's like some tin cup stuff.
It is incredible. If nothing else, go find yourself on YouTube the clip of the finish of the 18th on the fifth round of the World Disc Golf Championships this weekend. It is absolutely astonishing. And of course, it's a very popular sport. There were thousands of people there, so the place just went berserk. It's probably one of my top five sports moments I've ever seen live, because I was watching live when it happened. So
That's fighting words.
Yeah.
That's
so,
my praise.
I've seen more incredible sports moments, you know, like on recording or later or whatever, but actually like seeing something happen live, like it blew my mind. He, by the way, that same player, James Conrad, who by the way ended up winning the tournament on the first sudden death hole, so that ended up allowing him to win. He also in the second round had a hole in one. So he had two miracle shots that ended up getting him the win over the course of the five rounds. So so there you go. You can research that, check that out. But that's the World Disc Golf Championship. You can probably find clips on YouTube.
Easily. Watching it, and the elation on the crowd is so. I love moments like this. I love it.
Yeah, it's incredible, right? It's absolutely
last
incredible.
Minute, do or die, sudden death, and you gotta get it in one shot. Love that.
Andrew, why don't you go next?
Okay, so I don't know if you remember, but a couple months ago, I recommended an anime called Demon Slayer that they released the first season, and then they released a movie, because I think what they're going to do is release a season, then a movie, then a season, then a movie. And the movie released in Japan a couple months ago, and it's already the highest grossing movie ever in Japan.
Wow.
Oh, my.
It passed Infinity War, passed Endgame, Avatar.
Yeah, no, that's a big list.
Yeah. All the movies in Japan, but this one topped it all. With all it had backing, it was one season of an anime. It was finally released in the U.S., and I watched it. It's called Demon Slayer Mugen, M-U-G-E-N, Train.
Okay.
Holy crap, this movie's phenomenal. It is so good. And it is one of the things you definitely have to watch the first season to have any idea what is going on. What I find so interesting about this anime and what sets it apart from the others is its unabashed willingness to combine CGI with anime. And I'm not talking like, you know, trying to hide that it's CGI. Like, no, it's pretty upfront what parts are CGI and what part is, you know, hand-drawn anime. But it flows so well together. It did it so well during the first season. It does it several times in the movie as well. And I think there's maybe one scene where I'm like, okay, you could have toned down the CGI to make it more realistic or to make it flow better, I guess is a better way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
But this movie is like, I was laughing, I was jumping up, and at the end of this movie, I was bawling my eyes out. This is an emotional movie. I can't recommend not only the movie, but the show as a whole. It's with one season, I can already say it's going to like crack like the greatest anime lists of all time whenever it finally wraps up.
Again,
so.
Them's fighting words. That's what that is.
I know. Trust me, I have a stacked list of greatest animes ever, but if they keep up with what they're doing, this is easily going to be like in the top. It's so good. And it's one of those where I can I can say I've seen both the dubbed and the subbed version, because Aaron knows that I am a big proponent of dubbed anime because I like to look at the art style instead of reading subtitles. But yeah. Can't recommend it enough.
John, so, finish us off. What is your buried treasure?
This is going to be a hard turn from anime and disc golf, but my buried treasure is a travel show on CNN starring Stanley Tucci. Searching for Italy is a 6-part travel log where American actor Stanley Tucci, I should say Italian actor Stanley Tucci, goes back to the homeland and samples food and cuisine and meets the people during lockdown. This was recorded last year in 6 of Italy's big food regions. And photographed immaculately. The show looks gorgeous. Stanley is endlessly charming and so much fun to watch interact and pepper in English and Italian. He's like mostly fluent. And there's just something so fun and charming about watching like a famous American actor like sit down on a bench in Rome and just have like these like really delicious looking pasta or these, I want to say crepes, but that's French, like these weird sort of pancake ball things he had in one episode with this cream filling. And don't watch this show on an empty stomach. Don't watch it when you're hungry, especially if you like Italian food or you want to see Italian sites. This is the kind of, like, I want to travel now. I want to eat these foods. I don't watch a lot of travel programming.
Biscotti or something? Cannolis maybe?
Something like that. It wasn't a cannoli. It was like something that was also like deep fried something. It looked fantastic.
Did it look kind of like a burrito or like an egg roll with like cream in the middle?
A little bit, yeah. And yeah. It looked great. Anyway, it is a super fun show. A little bit of history, a little bit of travel, but a big focus on food. And Stanley Tucci kind of goes around and sniffs things and eats things and tastes things and reacts delightfully to all of it. It is really, really fun. It's only like 6 episodes, so. But it's on CNN for some reason. Nice. I'm not sure why Travel Channel or Food Network didn't pick this up, but it's on CNN. I think all 6 episodes ended a couple months back, and I'm just now getting to him on my TiVo, but my wife and I have loved it.
Very nice. John's recommendation is, I believe, a show called Stanley Tucci Sniffs Things name of the show on CNN. We did it, guys. We did a podcast. Woo! We managed to make it happen. Congratulations to all for accomplishing your goals today. Thank you so much for joining us today for Sif Pop. It is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network at studiodna.media or by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Thank you, buddy.
Big thanks to Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Thanks, Phil.
And big ups to John Paula for hanging out with us again today. John, where do you want people to go check you out?
I'm always unprepared for this question. I don't have anything going on. Follow me on Twitter, at John Paula, or follow me on Letterboxd, at John Paula, or Instagram, which is at The John Paula, because I was a little too slow for that platform.
There you go.
I post about politics, movies, and my family, respectively, on those 3 platforms, so pick your poison, and I'll see you there.
Nice. Much love
and that's John without an H, by the way. J-O-N.
That is correct. Much love and gratitude to our Sif Pop members as well for giving monthly to make Sif Pop a real thing. Support starts at $3 a month. You can check out which levels have which perks at patreon.com/SifPop if you're curious about that. And thanks for checking that out. Lots of ways to connect with us or help us out. You can leave a comment, a rating, or a review at Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thank you for moving Sift Pop into the top 100 film review podcasts on Apple Podcasts. We appreciate that. Thank you for making that happen. You can also email us feedback@sifpop.com if you want to. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie loving friends will probably like the show too, so make sure you let them know about it and that listening is much easier than using a stick shift while in orbit. We will be back next week with The Tomorrow War and Steven Soderbergh's new movie No Sudden Move. So we will see you then.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.